Bit by bit, we talk more openly about mental illness in our society, and some of the old prejudices and fears fall away. Not fast enough, perhaps, for people who suffer from mental illness. Our guest this hour struggled for years with getting a proper diagnosis and effective treatment, a common story for people with mental illness. Terry Chaney tells her story and helps readers better understand mental illness and its effects in her book, Modern Madness, An Owner's Manual. Terry Chaney is a lawyer, and she spent several years representing major movie studios and celebrities in the Los Angeles area. She still lives there, but got out of lawyering to write and focus on mental health matters. Terry wrote two previous books, Manic and The Dark Side of Innocence, about her own dealings with bipolar disorder. Terry Chaney, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate being here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, you write in your most recent book about adoring the word madness, which obviously appears in the title. Why?
I think madness is a terrific word. It expresses what I feel, a certain difference from the rest of the population, but in a great way, you know, sort of a spark of genius sometimes. I just think madness is fascinating.
It's interesting, too, how it's almost like parts of yourself leave notes for the other parts. Would you tell folks about your manic cheat sheet and where you kept copies?
My manic cheat sheet is something that I carry around with me at all times to remind me of things not to do when I get manic. Mania is a time when you're very euphoric, blissful, charismatic. It sounds great, but your judgment goes out the window and you do reckless things, like you act out sexually or you spend all your money or do things you wouldn't normally do in your right frame of mind. So I carry around a list of 10 things not to do. For example, don't get my hair cut short because I'm not Audrey Hepburn. I always want to get my hair cut short when I'm manic. Just reminders that I need to watch my judgment.
Yeah, the first example in the book is you're going to go back and pick up some guy you were getting interested in, and he and you, and you said, I have to go get my pashmina, and your manic cheat sheet fell out of your pashmina, and suddenly the trajectory of the evening changed greatly. Has it essentially saved you from yourself a few times?
It definitely has. I'm very happy that I carry it around still, even though I don't get manic in the same way that I used to. But it's just a reminder, because when you're manic, you don't always know that you are. You need other people or yourself to remind you.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the other end from mania is the depression, and at your worst moments where you clearly didn't want to do much, I mean, what did you want to do?
Well, when you're depressed, there isn't much you feel you can do. I suffer from something called psychomotor retardation, which a lot of people are familiar with, but they don't know there's a term for it. It means that your body and your will are almost paralyzed. You just can't move. You can't get out of bed. You can't take a shower. It's even worse than that. Like, I'm looking at a pen on my desk right now that's about a foot away. If I were severely depressed and I wanted to pick up that pen, I'd have to stare at it for maybe 15 minutes just to get my hand to move and maybe pick it up and maybe write something. It's just a terrible, terrible feeling, and probably the worst part of depression for me, besides suicidality.
Terry, how long did it take to get a clear diagnosis and a plan for treating what ails you?
Well, it took me about 10 years, and that is not uncommon with bipolar mm-hmm. disorder, because it is an illness that needs to sort of play out over time. So you see what the illness looks like. I was initially diagnosed with major depression, and again, that's very common because you go in to see your doctor when you're feeling lousy. You don't go in to see him when you're manic and you're feeling on top of the world. So the doctor naturally diagnoses you with depression, and unfortunately, antidepressants just by themselves without a mood stabilizer can cause mania, can trigger mania. So it's very important to get that correct bipolar diagnosis, or at least to rule it out.
When, in those periods when you were severely depressed, did you even, you obviously had some intellectual memory of mania, but did you ever, was it like it was a different person's body or something?
That's an interesting way of describing it. Unfortunately, it was my body because I definitely felt the depressive feelings. But I have much more self-awareness when I'm depressed than when I'm manic. I sometimes, when I try really hard, I can tell myself, okay, it's depression talking. These feelings and thoughts are not really reflective of reality. It's the depression talking, and that can help tremendously. And I think so many of us right now with the pandemic are going through a low-grade depression. Mm-hmm. And I really do think if you can bring some awareness to the situation, it's just a reflection of your brain chemistry being awry, it can help tremendously.
So this book does go beyond your own story. What did you seek out to do here? Who were you aiming for with this book?
I really wanted to reach out to not just people with a diagnosis, but family, friends, people who love or care for someone who's struggling, and that is a lot of people because most of us are affected by mental illness in one degree or another. We know someone or we have it ourselves or we love someone. So I thought it was really important to go beyond my own story, although I use my own stories to illustrate lessons that I've learned from my journey.
We've talked a little bit so far about mania and depression, but what is a mixed state, Terry?
I'm glad you asked that because not a lot of people know, and I certainly didn't know until I researched it heavily. Mixed state is a combination of manic and depressive symptoms. It's where mania and depression collide. For example, you have these terrible thoughts about yourself and the future and hopelessness and all the things you're familiar with from depression, but you also have this just relentless energy and irritability that you get with mania. So you combine the two, and it's a perfect storm for suicide attempts. That's when most suicide attempts occur, because you have the energy to act on those very dark thoughts and feelings. So it affects about 40% of people with bipolar disorder.
Well, I see what you mean, though, because if you're in a depression and you can't even get to the shower, I mean, you wouldn't really act on suicidality, but mixed state has that greater potential for it. And then there's also rapid cycling, as you point out, soon after you tell us about mixed state.
Mm-hmm. Rapid cycling is something that I particularly have. Not everyone with bipolar disorder does, but it's where you can cycle between moods very quickly, like even within the course of a day. In some ways, I think it's a blessing because I have shorter episodes than a lot of people I know who may experience mania or depression for months, and I can't even imagine that. But the problem with rapid cycling is that it's very hard to treat because you're constantly chasing the symptoms. You know, it's like a comet's tail. You just can't get a hold of those symptoms.
Mm-hmm. All right, so yeah, the thing that you were just feeling is gone, and so now you're dealing with something else, yeah. Which brings us back around to thoughts of suicide. Do you feel like we are entering a new era in just being able to talk about suicide publicly, Terry?
I think it has changed with Robin Williams' suicide and then, you know, the unfortunate celebrity suicides that followed. I do think there's more awareness about it and more of a willingness to talk about it, but it also is the rates are skyrocketing, particularly among young people. In the world, another person will die of suicide every 40 seconds. So we are looking at a suicide epidemic, and that was before the COVID-19 struck. So it's a very, very troubling topic, Jeff, and we really do need to talk more about it.
We do, and I find news organizations also doing things that, you know, it used to be we didn't cover suicides because we didn't want to encourage more, but then so a lot of people in the TV or in news business generally are getting back into or getting into for the first time talking about suicide. One of the things we have learned along the way is don't be afraid to bring it up. If you think someone is thinking about suicide, ask them. You won't cause them to commit suicide by asking the question.
That's That is so wonderful that you said that, because people think they're going to put that thought in your mind. Believe me, the thought is already in your mind when you're depressed. It's very important to just sort of break that taboo and that secrecy that surrounds the subject, and really get talking about it and let some of the darkness dissipate if possible.
Which is a major theme of this book, and certainly other books about helping people with mental illness, is that be a listener. I mean, that really, really helps people. I mean, don't for God's sake tell them to get over it, or like, you know, come on, buck up. Or how many different stupid things did people say to you?
Oh, my God. I've heard it all. And I believe I have a new mission, and it's five little words. If you're dealing with someone who's struggling right now, and many of us are, we're quarantined with someone who's going through a mental health issue, just these five little words, instead of giving advice, sit them down and say, tell me where it hurts. Tell me where it hurts, instead of eat more blueberries, go for a walk, take a shower, exercise more. It will do wonders. It will let the person feel that they're not being judged. It makes you feel less guilty because you can't take the advice that's being given to you. When you start to talk about that darkness, you know, you let some of it out and it hits the air and it doesn't have the same power. So that's my new mission. Tell me where it hurts.
Okay, I wrote that down. Five words, tell me where it hurts. That's a good place to start. Terry Chaney, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Modern Madness, an Owner's Manual. There's a whole section on stigma. I should point out how the book is laid out. User precautions, instructions for use, troubleshooting, maintenance, and warranties. These all come after a system overview. So in user precautions, there's a whole section on stigma, which we have talked about in mental health in the past. And I know I've had at least a couple of listeners say, you know, it's only a stigma because you keep talking about stigma, but you bring up the issue of self-stigma, which is really important to recognize.
Yes, it's something that I didn't recognize until, I didn't have a term for it again until I did some serious research. Self-stigma, I also call it bad bedtime stories. Think of those anxious thoughts you have before you go to bed about yourself, like I'm not being productive enough, I'm not being good enough, I failed at something. You know, those thoughts that worry you before you go to sleep. Self-stigma is really poisonous doubt in yourself and your right to be cared for and loved. And it really gets in the way of one of the things that I've found most helpful for mental illness, which is self-compassion. Self-compassion is a very underutilized tool in fighting mental illness or just low-grade depression, again, like what most of us, including Michelle Obama, is going through right now.
Well, one in five Americans, you point out, are on some kind of psychiatric drug. So this is not rare, but it sounds like people still don't exactly volunteer this information. Nobody comes in and says, hey, guess what? I'm on an antidepressant.
You know, I don't understand that, and it mystifies me, the stigma, because mental illness, particularly bipolar disorder, which is a chemical imbalance in the brain, is so physical. And as Robin Williams said, the brain is a 3.5-pound organ. You know, all of this stuff is in your brain, and you wouldn't tell someone with a malfunctioning liver to, you know, just make lemonade out of lemons or snap out of it. You wouldn't tell Stephen Hawking to just get out of the chair and take a walk. You know, it's very, very physical. So stigma mystifies me.
Yeah, but, you know, it seems like families and loved ones of people with mental illness have become a powerful force. We've been watching the rise of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and other groups, and it seems like they're having some success in getting the word out that this isn't rare, and stop treating people like they're weirdos because they have mental illness.
NAMI is a terrific organization. You can join it at NAMI.org. It's free. They offer online groups and for family and friends of loved ones with someone who has a mental illness or the person with a diagnosis themselves. It just is terrific. I'm always recommending it.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. Our guest is Terry Chaney, a lawyer who spent years representing major movie studios and celebrities, got out of lawyering to write and focus on mental health matters. She's written two previous books, Manic and the Dark Side of Innocence, about her own dealings with bipolar disorder. Her latest book is called Modern Madness, an Owner's Manual. It's set up like a car owner's manual. And you can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The section on instructions for use gets back to the five words that tell me where it hurts. The advice for people close to people dealing with mental illness is don't try to fix it.
That is so hard for all of us to do, and I'm gonna overgeneralize here and say, particularly men. I've found that in my experience over the years, I've had a lot of boyfriends who really want to try to fix me, and they mean well and they love me, but that's not the way to go about it. I need to be listened to. I need to be heard. I need to be able to talk about what I'm afraid of or what I'm anxious about. That's how you can help me. I'm not really broken. I don't need to be fixed.
Now, there are some powerful urges that have to be counteracted, obviously. The idea to, you know, to throw it back on the person, or like, this is your fault. You can, I can't believe Eat More Blueberries was one of them, but
I hear that all the time.
but there's a big one you say here, never underestimate the danger.
Yes, there are some very serious statistics about suicide, particularly with bipolar disorder, that up to 50% of people, that's 50%, may attempt suicide in their lifetimes. 80% have some kind of suicidal ideation. It is a very dangerous disease, and depression is also very dangerous. You really need to take it seriously when people, even when they joke about wanting to kill themselves, it doesn't hurt to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. You may save a life.
Yeah, and again, it's okay to ask. You're not gonna they're not gonna go, oh, what a great idea, and go off and act upon it. Right. So for a few pages, this actually turns into an etiquette book. Explain how this approach came about.
Well, I think that just the theory behind etiquette is just treating people the way you wish you were being treated. And, you know, it's sort of the golden rule. And that's very easy to apply in terms of mental illness. It's not that easy. I shouldn't say it's very easy. People need to try to have empathy first and act after. Mm-hmm. Just like good manners. Think of the other person's comfort.
So, telling a person in a manic episode, for example, that you think they're manic, what's the etiquette there, for example?
That can be very tricky. I have a few people in my life that I have given permission to call me on my manic symptoms, because it's sort of like telling a drunk that they're drunk. You've got to be careful. You might engender some hostility or... occasionally I've had it used against me if I've argued with someone and they say, oh, you must be getting manic. Well, no, maybe I'm just right, you know. So you've got to be careful not to use it as a weapon. Use it as a tool.
All right, and that's actually something you mentioned a little earlier in the same section of the book. Don't throw the situation back on the person struggling. And you have had people do this, it sounds like, you know, the old pull yourself together, knock it off, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't know where the bootstraps comment came from. I hear that bootstraps comment a lot. You've got to be tough and pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And it's not about being tough. It's about being kind to yourself. You know, it's a whole different perspective. Being kind to yourself will get you better. Being tough on yourself will just get you more depressed.
And as another interviewee pointed out a few years ago, you know, it's physically impossible to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You can pull your boots on with your bootstraps, but you can't pull yourself up.
Thank you. I've always wondered about that expression. I don't get it. I don't get that.
Yeah, it's maybe it's ready for retirement. I don't know. We talked about people have permission to tell you when they think you're being manic. Now, on the depression end of things, though, you wrote about your love for white lilies in your earlier book, Manic, and you have a friend who now uses that knowledge. How?
Yes, I was very suicidal at one point. I was having a very rough time, and it was just a day like any other, but I really felt like I wanted to end it all. And to my surprise, I got a delivery of white lilies from a friend, and another friend just called and checked up on me and talked to me for a while. And just little things, little acts of kindness happened in my life, and it completely detoured me from that suicidal path. It's amazing what random acts of kindness can do.
Little things.
It doesn't have to be a delivery of flowers. It can just be a text. I love you. This will pass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So just the acknowledgement that you're going through something. And again, you know, tell me where it hurts as we come back to the five
right.
words you gave us. There's a portion shortly after the discussion of white lilies in Modern Madness where you describe this extraordinary meeting with a man you had known years before, and it's just kind of spooky how honest you both decided to be with each other that, you know, how you doing? And nobody said fine. Where did it actually go from there, Terry?
This was when, I'm missing the part that you're talking about, which
well, you, it was you met some man that you had met years before, and instead of saying fine, you got off like, well, I'm actually having a really bad day. I'm awful. Yeah.
Yes, we ended up, we both said, I'm not doing well, which was extraordinary to begin with, that two people say that to each other. And we ended up talking in a park for about, 2 hours. And he told me all about his problems, and I told him all about mine. And it was amazing. I just felt so much better after that. And for weeks afterwards, I would recall that wonderful experience. And it just buoyed me up. It was lovely.
And yeah, it just sounds like a great, great dose of honesty, which is probably a great, great thing to have in your regimen. But let's talk about therapy. I mean, you do describe having it in the book. Is it generally singly? Do you do some in groups? I mean, it does help sometimes, obviously, to have people around who can share stories of experiences with.
I've done both. I've been in therapy for about 30 years, and I facilitated a mental health group, support group at UCLA's Neuropsychiatric Institute for about 15 years. So I'm a big believer in both. I think group therapy is great because you not only do you realize you're not alone, which is, you know, of such importance, you get sort of a mirror for your behavior, and you can try out things there that, you know, it's like a microcosm for the bigger world. Mm. It can really help in relationships. But individual therapy, I think, is essential for anyone who's struggling with mental health issues. It's just, again, that not being alone with your problems, not feeling like you are the only one who's ever experienced this, is a saving grace.
And at this point in your life, Terry, I mean, how often do you have episodes anymore, or do you anymore, between therapy and medication?
I am much, much better than I was in the past. I don't get manic to the same extent, but I do have depressive episodes. They just don't go as low as they used to. I'm very, very fortunate that I found the right medication cocktail for me. It takes time and patience. I know that people struggle with getting just the right meds on board, so I'm living proof that it can happen.
We were just talking about therapy, Terry, and in the section of the book about troubleshooting, I notice your own personal sanity checklist ends with resist the temptation to lie in therapy. Have you learned some lessons there?
Yes. I think it's like any other relationship. You know, you've got to push the honesty, and it's easy to make up stories. Sometimes I feel like I'm boring my poor therapist. So I'll embellish a bit, and I've got to call myself on that.
Well, you also mentioned that talk therapy is like a strip tease. That's a direct quote from the book. How?
Yes, because you really have to take off the veil to have good therapy. You really need to be honest and open and reveal yourself. And if you're naked with another person and you're comfortable, you're in a good place.
So before we get into the medication part directly, I do want to point out that other things can go on with you. Talk about mixed feelings that you had about, you got a thyroid diagnosis.
Yes, I actually had hypothyroid disorder, which means your thyroid is a little low, so you get on thyroid medication and it you know, that's the treatment, and you stay on thyroid medication. Well, I was so excited to have something that could be talked about and fixed, and there was no stigma, that I actually went around and told my friends, I have hypothyroid disorder. I got no judgment back, I got a lot of me too, and just take a pill, you'll be fine. It was 100% difference between the way mental illness is treated.
So you do, once we do get into the actual psychotropic drugs, you talk about the belief that they are both overprescribed and yet also underprescribed. How does that work?
Yes. Well, I think a lot of people get antidepressants sort of as a knee-jerk response to bad things happening in their life, and I don't think that it's that great an idea. I think therapy is a much better response to if something, if you're just having an event that's really hard and you're having difficulty coping with it. But unfortunately, most people get their antidepressants from primary care doctors who are not specialists in this kind of medication. I think they're underprescribed because so many people who need care don't have access to it. I mean, I'm a middle-class white woman, and I have trouble paying for my medications and getting the treatment that I need. It's very expensive and hard to find. So over and underprescribed, yes.
We talked about the general set of feelings, the prejudices that come with perceptions of mental illness, and the hope that prejudice and fear is declining over time, but there's still for some people probably a barrier to admitting that there's a problem big enough to seek out help for it. How would you recommend, and I don't know if you get there directly in this user's manual, that people do think about themselves and their condition? I mean, because, there's some people would say, no, I'm just a little down. Some things have gone not a good way in my life, which obviously many people can say and have been able to say for months now in the world. But how identify the difference between I'm just a little down and I'm depressed?
I think it all has to do with self-education. That is so critical. Before I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder or even major depression, I read a lot about it, and it's so much easier now with the internet. Just go on the internet and really find out if what you're feeling may be the sign or the symptom of a mental illness that can be treated, because you shouldn't have to suffer in today's day and age with so many good medications and treatments out there. You shouldn't have to suffer alone. It's about educating yourself first about what is going on with yourself.
Mm-hmm. And as you point out in the book, if nothing else comes through, that it probably should be this, that you're not cured by pills. In other words,
you don't
take a pill and everything goes away and your life is great.
Right. It takes a lot of hard work. I mean, the medications get you to a point where you're able to do the work in therapy, is my opinion. It gets you so you're not so depressed that you can't move, you know, or you're not so high that you just don't care about anything else. It really will get you to a balanced place where you can start to deal with the consequences of mental illness, because there are consequences, see, with relationships and, you know, financial and work problems. So you really need that combination of the two.
But flip side, if it is a chemical imbalance, and with the chemical imbalance corrected, you're feeling okay. Is talk therapy necessary? How do you know when you need more than just the medication?
I think most people, just in order to function, are going to need more than the medication, because their past probably is littered with the consequences of their mental illness. The way that you've come to cope with things in depression, for example, you might have very bad coping skills that you've used to try to get you through the bad times, or you may have, you know, tried to self-medicate with alcohol or drugs. It's not at all uncommon, and again, that's where self-compassion comes in, to realize that, you know, my life could be better. I'm surviving with the medications, but I could be thriving if I really started working on my life and my tools, my coping skills.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. So even if you've got the initial the acute symptoms dealt with, the fact is that there's still mechanisms you have come to use in your life that aren't going to work for you when you're feeling healthier.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's
so
correct.
How about self-medication? And once I saw your first Tequila Sunrise in the book, I figured there were going to be a few more behind that. So how long for you to find, A, for to stop self-medicating, and B, to find the combination of meds that worked correctly for you?
Boy, I'll tell you, this is such an important topic. I truly did not realize that when you drink, your medications aren't going to work. When you drink or use street drugs, they just don't work. Your brain is getting too many mixed signals. You know, alcohol is a depressant, for example. It took me a long time and a lot of heartache to learn that. But when I stopped drinking, and that was over 20 years ago, I've been sober, my medications began to work. So it was a tremendous lesson to learn. And I think it's important to realize that medications don't always work right away. You need to be, as I said before, you need to be patient and to work really with your doctor, which most people don't do. I think we have something in America that is called white coat worship, where we don't want to bother our doctors or we're afraid to talk to them. With mental health, you need to tweak those medications quite frequently, because your mood often is changing and your mental illness is changing in response to things going on around you. For example, COVID-19 is bringing a lot of people down, and they really should be talking to their doctors about getting some help.
Have you had any side effects? I noticed there are a number of drugs that are supposed to help people's mental health, but they have side effects that can actually make them worse. We've talked about over the years medications where people got suicidal ideation where it didn't exist before, stuff like that.
Well, I think the better question is, are there any side effects you didn't get? I certainly had my fair share.
Wow.
Yeah, you have to understand, Jeff, I've been on a lot of medications. I mean, I was on medications even from Europe that we tried until we found something that worked. So I've been on a lot of drugs. I think the drugs are better now. I think there's more recognition of, you know, how to prescribe them than there used to be. But their side effects are a genuine issue. And again, that's where therapy can come in to help you deal with that.
And so how much different? I was going to ask improvement, but I guess it's such a difference now. I mean, you know, 20 years ago you stopped drinking. You've been adjusting medication
right
all the time. How different is your life from what it was like 20 years ago?
I am so much happier and so much saner. I mean, I still have my days. Yesterday was not a good day. I was bored all day and thinking, you know, life should be better than this. But today I'm talking to you. It's a good day. And I just feel like I have a purpose in my life, which is to really witness the suffering and the struggle of mental illness, because it's just happening to too many people, and it shouldn't be as big a secret. Hiding the secret is worse than the secret itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been an important lesson for me to learn.
You know, it's interesting, too, as I went through the book, that my perception of it as an owner's manual changed from thinking that this was for someone who was struggling with mental illness alone. But the more you read into the book, you realize this is really an owner's manual for everybody around anybody with mental illness.
That's right. And there are so many people that are affected. I call it the 6 degrees of separation. Whenever I tell someone that I have bipolar disorder, inevitably, I hear back that, oh, my cousin has it, or I'm working with someone who has it, or I have it. And that was the biggest surprise for me, because I was very afraid about coming out of the closet with my mental illness. I didn't tell anyone when I was practicing law that I was suffering. And to come out publicly was quite a challenge, but it's been so rewarding. The compassion and the positive response I've gotten has been amazing.
Now, how are you coping with the extended weirdness of this time in history, yesterday aside, and how concerned are you that many more people are going to be joining the Walking Wounded because of it?
I think we are experiencing a lot of Walking Wounded out there. I really do. I certainly hear from a lot of people who are struggling with the isolation in particular that's going on. That's one of the worst things possible for your mental health. But on the other hand, I've heard from a lot of readers with a mental health diagnosis who say they feel like almost like they've been in training for COVID-19 because they are used to isolating and to binge watching Netflix and, you know, maybe eating everything in the refrigerator. So there's sort of an odd dichotomy there, where I'm hearing from people with a diagnosis who are doing okay, but people who have never had to struggle through times like these are really experiencing feelings that they may never have felt before, which actually gives me a weird kind of hope, mm-hmm. because I'm thinking that as a result of so many people having depression and anxiety right now that haven't gone through it before, I'm thinking that maybe there will be more awareness and compassion for mental illness than there ever has been before. Maybe it's possible.
Yeah, sure. The compassion for sure, that it's like, oh, so this is what it feels like
right.
to be in this situation for as long as we have. Yeah, so it's
right.
Yeah, interesting moments in American history for sure. And even without COVID-19, there people do have mental illness around us, and we have to get used to it. The book is called Modern Madness, an Owner's Manual by Terry Chaney, also the author of Manic and the Dark Side of Innocence. Terry, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I really enjoyed myself.
Thanks. I did too. Take care.